Our moderator for today's program is David Snyder, the publisher at Crain's Chicago Business. Crain's, of course, is the nation's leading local business newspaper and website with a weekly print readership of more than 200,000 and an online readership of over 1 million. Named publisher in October of 2010. In July of 2011, he was named a vice president of Crain's parent company, Crain Communications, Inc. He's a 33-year Crain veteran, although you don't look at David, who started his career as a researcher in the publication's Washington, D.C. bureau before moving to our city in 1984 when Crain's was in only its sixth year of business. He has served in various newsroom management positions, including more than 6 years as the editor. David is on the board of directors of the Harris Theater, where he serves as chairman of the Finance Committee, member of the Executive Committee, and the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. He is also a member of the CEO Council of Chicago United, the Commercial Club of Chicago, the Economic Club of Chicago, our City Club of Chicago, the Chicago Club, and the Executives Club of Chicago. David is a native of Easton, Pennsylvania, a graduate of American University in Washington, D.C., where he received his degrees in business. David, please come up and introduce your panelists and get our program rolling.
Ed, thank you very much. Before I start, I do want to acknowledge I've had the good fortune of speaking before the City Club on several occasions and been a guest in the audience many times more. And I do just want to do a shout out to Jay and Ed and the board, just in the surge of activity that the City Club has experienced in recent years. And this banquet room in Maggiano's in some ways has become the new town hall for Chicago, where consistently we are getting high quality, timely programming on issues that are of greatest importance to our region. So I wanted to just thank you and acknowledge just the great work that the City Club has done. Now, in keeping with this theme, today we will be discussing the future of City of Chicago finances. And we all know the current narrative about Chicago is focused on two things, our abhorrent high violence rate and also our precarious financial position. Now, just how bad is it on the financial front? And let me humanize the numbers. An analysis by the Civic Federation of Chicago estimates that the combined unfunded pension liabilities and general debt obligation is equal to $22,000 for every man, woman, and child that lives within the city's borders. And we know it's more than just a balance sheet issue because it strikes at the core of the city's ability to serve the neediest, fund infrastructure and economic development projects, improve education, and provide adequate public safety for our citizens. So every dollar that is spent on debt service is money not dedicated to more important city services. And it's only compounded by the fact that our below investment grade bond rating causes us to pay millions of dollars more each year in additional debt service because investors who buy Chicago bonds insist on a premium to compensate for the risk they're taking buying them. Now consider this. Chicago's low debt rating requires us to offer tax-exempt yields that are roughly 80% higher than investment-grade munis. To me, that's a staggering statistic. Now, significant progress has been made in recent months as Mayor Manuel has successfully passed multiple tax increases in order to put the city's pension funds back on a path towards solvency. But challenges and pitfalls lie ahead. So today we're fortunate to have a gathering of uniquely qualified panelists to discuss both the present state and future prospects for the city of Chicago's finances. First, representing the critically important rating agency community, we have Jennifer Boyd of S&P Global Ratings. Jennifer, please come to the desk. Jennifer focuses on local bond ratings, including the city of Chicago. In October, she revised her outlook for the city's general obligation bonds to stable, but still considers the city's municipal employee pension plan to be, quote, one of the weakest funded in the nation. Second, we have Fran Spielman of the Chicago Sun-Times, the person many consider the dean of the City Hall Press Corps, I would argue, along with Greg Hines from Cranes. Fran has covered Chicago mayors dating back to Richard J. Daley and is widely respected by both friends and a handful of foes for her aggressive, scoop-driven reporting. And lastly, who knows the numbers better than Lawrence Massal, president of the Civic Federation of Chicago? I'm biased because Lawrence is a good friend, but I would argue he has done more to raise the awareness of the city's pension and debt crisis than anyone in Chicago. So, Lawrence, thank you for being with us today. To get things started, each panelist will give a brief assessment of the city's financial landscape from their own perspective. We'll start with Lawrence, who will lay out where we are and our trajectory into the future. Next, I'd like Fran to give an overview inside City Hall, as well as her general impression of what needs to be done in the future. And lastly, Jennifer will provide insights into the important role that rating agencies play in the municipal bond market and the criteria that she is using to assess the risk associated with Chicago securities. So, Lawrence, if you'd be kind enough to kick off the discussion.
Thank you very much, and thank you, David, for that very kind introduction. Thanks to all of you for being here today. I think in this crowd there are a lot of longtime friends, supporters, many of the Civic Federation board. So any of the credit that I have unique understanding or awareness of this fiscal condition really requires full disclosure that it is the board members that come from the major corporations, institutions, and service firms of Chicago that make it possible for the very talented staff, many of which are here from the Civic Federation, that allow us to stay on top of these issues. For over 122 years, the Civic Federation has existed to try to move the governments forward. Our members don't seek to take over the government. They don't seek to basically avoid any sort of tax accountability or responsibility, but instead to move them forward. It is an amazing time, right? The Chinese teach us that it is both a blessing and a curse to live in interesting times. We are in the most interesting times. The city of Chicago, which just, you know, a year ago, if we think back where we were a year ago and not dealing with many of our major problems, we can see some improvement. David pointed out the fact that Mayor Emanuel and his administration have moved forward against significant obstacles in starting to stabilize the city's finances. The increased property tax, the increased 911 tax, the increased tax on water fees, all aimed at providing some funding stabilization to the pensions, were definitely steps in the right direction. Concerns remain, though, by the rating agencies, by the Civic Federation, by the pension funds themselves, whether the amount of money going into those funds will be sufficient to stabilize them before they run out of money. It is not an extremist joke that these funds are almost out of money. They are basically, in the case of the Fireman's Fund, in the case of the Municipal Fund, they're seeing more money going out than is coming in. Any downward trend in the investment returns would have a significant impact. The Civic Federation can't speak strongly enough of how much responsibility the state of Illinois has in helping our city and our county and all of our local governments, which were created by the state of Illinois, to help solve this problem. These problems were created primarily by a complicity that said we are going to ignore what the actuaries tell us is the cost of providing these defined benefit plans. We are going to fund them according to statutory formulas that have nothing to do with the full cost of the program, and we are going to put that into state statute. So now even though we have given the Emanuel administration credit for moving forward with a plan for the municipal pension fund and the laborers' pension fund, they still need the Illinois General Assembly and the governor to sign off on those changes, because everything that happens in the pension funds is controlled by state statute. The state of Illinois operating now without a budget is something that we all need to recognize is completely financially reckless. You cannot manage any large institution, no any organization, without a budget. The stopgap that was announced in May is neither a budget, because it doesn't attempt to link the known obligations of the state with the actual known revenue. We are incurring billions of dollars as we speak in obligations for the state that we don't have a sufficient revenue to pay for. By the Civic Federation's estimate, if this impasse continues, over $8.7 billion will be incurred by the state of Illinois, for which it has no known revenue to pay for it. That is because the stopgap, although many of the appropriations that were passed as part of the stopgap run out in December, others continue, such as elementary and secondary education appropriations. But even those appropriations, it's very important to recognize when you look at the financial health of the city and the financial future of the city and what the tax policies are going to be, you come right back to the Chicago Public Schools. So even though the state passed full year's worth of appropriations for elementary and secondary education, they gave the Chicago Public Schools a promise that they would provide $215 million if the General Assembly and the governor reached consensus on pension reform. It would have been a stronger promise if they told us what pension reform was, but that promise exists. They're meeting down in Springfield, the legislature, as well as the governor. They have not defined what pension reform is. They haven't. On the governor's desk now is the appropriation to provide $215 million to the Chicago Public School Pension Fund, but there's no guarantee that the governor is going to sign it. There is no guarantee that the legislature will reach consensus on pension reform. I did have some slides, and I don't think I have my clicker. So because this is such a riveting topic, and I have everyone's attention.
Oh, we do.
Oh.
We've got the slide. You don't have the clicker,
right.
But we've got the
slides. Thank you. Pay no attention to that person behind the curtain that is controlling what I say. I just had a couple slides that I wanted to that really sort of demonstrate the challenges that Chicagoans face. These bars indicate the total liability, and David had referenced them, per capita in Chicago for our government's unfunded pension liabilities and debt. The red bars indicate the amount of state debt. The green bar is the local government debt, and that includes the City of Chicago, public schools, and the overlapping governments. The blue, which is one of the largest, is the state pension debt, but equally large and growing is the local government pension liabilities. So the next chart really shows you what has been happening in the Chicago in terms of property taxes and the extension of the major governments over the last 12 years. Over the last 12 years, we've seen a fairly steady but not significant growth over those 12 years of about 3.5%. You'll see in 2006 and 2007, there was an actual drop in the levy. That's the combined levies per capita for all of the governments, Chicago Public Schools, which I should mention, most of the local governments in Cook County are limited, that are not home ruled, by the property tax extension limitation law. That means they cannot grow under state statute beyond the rate of inflation or 5%, whichever is less. We are in a low inflationary environment, and so that has been significantly less. The City of Chicago and the County of Cook have self-imposed caps. So the point is that we've had relatively steady but not dramatic swings in the growth. If you look over 2011 to 2015, you see a very significant growth in the property taxes, almost equal to the previous 8 years. Actually, it exceeds it. About $775 million in new property tax levies, about 25% since 2011. All of that increase that you see in 15 is a result of the police and fire pension fund. I need to point out that the employees of the police and fire pension fund, the employees of all the pension funds, did nothing wrong. The employees did nothing wrong. They were told they were going to get a benefit. and the government basically found ways to ignore the financial obligations. Since the Supreme Court ruled last March that we can't take away any benefits, including the unaccrued benefits for existing employees and retirees, the challenges in Chicago have gotten even greater. The next chart is a gives you an example that even with a steady increase in property taxes, the challenges on the unfunded pensions continues to grow. The line there shows you that per capita, it's grown from the for Chicagoans, and this is only for the city's four major pension funds. It doesn't include the state's obligations. It doesn't include the county and others. But it has grown from about $3,288 to over $8,000 in per capita. And again, to point out, that's every man, woman, child, and the children who are going to end up having to pay for this. Many of them don't have the ability to make that payment just yet. And it shows you the overall growth. The bar shows you that it was at $9.3 billion, the unfunded liability. It now stands at over $22.6 billion just for the city funds. Quickly, how did it happen? The next chart, if I could. How did it happen that the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago got into such a financial predicament? It came from making short-term, politically attractive decisions that weren't tied to fiscal reality. It was easier to ignore the cost of our pension programs than it was to fund it. This chart demonstrates to you the difference between what the actuary said was necessary to fund the city pension funds and what, in fact, the city under state law was able to contribute to them. You can see that in 2006, we were contributing not the 24% of payroll that the actuaries had determined, but 12.5%. You follow it all the way up to 2015, again, you see the spike. Again, that's because of the beginning of the five-year ramp for police and fire. But even under that plan, we are still over $300 million short from what the actuaries tell us is necessary to fully stabilize these funds than that which we are able to contribute based on the existing plans. This is all a wind-up to tell you that there is some cause for relief, that we are making progress. If the state of Illinois does not get its financial act in order, if it doesn't follow the 49 other states in the union that all have decided to operate with a budget, if it doesn't provide some assistance to the city of Chicago and our other local governments around the state, it is unlikely that we will stabilize the state's finances or our local governments.
Lawrence,
thank you.
Thank you. Fran?
Did anyone ever watch the Ed Sullivan Show? Remember the guy who with the plates spinning at the same time trying to keep them from falling? That's kind of what this is, a tremendous balancing act to try to find the amount of taxes that are needed, but the ones that won't be too much so that people start fleeing for the suburbs. It is a huge balancing act and an incredible problem that the mayor inherited from his predecessor because Richard M. Daley kind of put his head in the sand about pensions. He had a commission. They didn't recommend anything, or he put the report on the shelf. The mayor's theme when he had his budget address was that the storm cloud has lifted, that the pension crisis is no longer hovering over Chicago. Well, in fact, that isn't quite true. Yes, progress has been made, as Lawrence has said. We finally have dedicated revenue sources for each of the four pension funds at great cost to the taxpayers. Obviously, the $588 million property taxes for police and fire pension and school construction, the telephone tax for the laborers, the water and sewer tax for the municipal employees union. The structural deficit is down 80%. The mayor says he'll get rid of it by 2019. Scoop and toss, the very dangerous process of putting off on future generations debt that should be repaid right now. That's going to be gone by 2019, the mayor says. He's no longer borrowing to fund legal settlements, which we have many because of the problems in the police department. The rainy day fund isn't being raided anymore. City assets aren't being sold anymore. But again, the red flags, as Lauren said, the teacher's contract that Jim Franzek settled at like 2 minutes before midnight, was it, Jim? still relies on the $215 million from the state. It relies on $300 million in budget cuts that the CPS has not yet identified. It relies on $87.5 million in TIF surplus money. That's a one-time fix. One of the things they did to get that money was to cancel the school, the selective enrollment school that was to be called Obama Prep. Remember that one when the mayor was running for reelection and promised that and then changed the name and now he's just gotten rid of the school. You wonder whether CPS should be building anything if they can't afford to run what they already have. The mayor, after years of relying so heavily on overtime for police officers to the tune of $116 million, is now reversing field and hiring 970 additional officers above and beyond vacancies, retirements, and attrition. And again, he's paying for that partly by the $40.5 million in TIF surplus that will go to the city of Chicago, $37 million in a prior year's balance from last year, and by sweeping aging revenue accounts, whatever that means. So you wonder, can he sustain the hiring of these huge numbers of police officers? Not that we don't need them, but can he afford to keep them? And, you know, S&P Jennifer said, Jennifer will say, I'm sure, that the performance is weak in part because the pension rescue plan relies on an assumption that these funds will continue to get an 8.5% return on their investments. Will they? If they don't, the whole thing falls out of balance and one of the plates will fall to the ground and the mayor will try to run and catch it. Also, the utility tax will fall $220 million short in year, I believe, 4 or 5, and you'll need to fund that gap. Each one of the other funds will also need a continuing increase in revenues in order to meet that ramp up to 90% funding in 40 years. How much more can the taxpayers of Chicago take? Well, each of these taxes that the mayor has identified keep going up and up and up and up because we need to keep with the ramp. That's what people are not being told. Police contracts expire in mid-year. The police union for sure is going to be asking for huge economic concessions in exchange for whatever disciplinary changes that the city has to seek, whether or not President Trump calls a halt to the investigation or at least to the consent decree part of the Justice Department investigation. We also have other labor contracts that are going to expire in mid-year. You know, I think Lawrence may have covered this, but when you look at the 2017 budget, it devotes $1.03 billion to pensions. 81% of that will come from property taxes, $839 million. That is a dramatic increase from the $480 million of 2015. But it's still almost $1 billion short of what we really need, actuarially. So that gives you some idea of how far we've come and how far we still have to go. If only Mayor Daley had attacked this problem when it was still more manageable, and if only Mayor Emanuel had done something about it in his first term. I know why he didn't. It was because he felt like he had to attack the structural deficit first and then move on to the pensions. He also wanted to be reelected. But again, it makes you wonder politically, how can a, you know, what are his chances if he does decide to go for reelection? And I don't think he's made up his mind yet, but he will by next year, and it's looking like he's maneuvering in that direction. Can the mayor be reelected on a platform of raising taxes by 1.2 plus billion with the prospect of more tax increases forever and the Laquan McDonald situation also? He's got to hope that a formidable candidate doesn't step forward. And I don't think you'll be surprised to see a lot of the incumbent aldermen retiring.
Fran, thank you very much. Just a reminder, if the audience does have questions, to fill out the blue cards on the table. Jennifer.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to correct the record. Helen Samuelson is actually the primary analyst for the city of Chicago. I'm the primary analyst for Chicago Public Schools, but I'm familiar with the Chicago rating and S&P Global's view on that. And I've covered a lot of Illinois credits throughout the Chicago area. I would also sort of give an overview of the purpose of the rating agencies and our role. So what happens is when a government like the city of Chicago or CPS wants to issue bonds, they can choose to come to us for a rating, and we have certain criteria that we use depending on what security type that they're issuing, and we put a rating on it. And then we review the rating over the years to see if the rating should stay the same or change depending on the different credit quality. And then investors can use that rating as one of the pieces of information that they look at when they choose whether to buy bonds or at what price to buy those bonds. And so we apply certain criteria. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell or anything like that. We have specific criteria, and the GEO ratings for City of Chicago and Chicago Public Schools are based on similar but slightly different criteria. So the criteria for the city is scored. It looks at the economy. It looks at management conditions, budgetary performance, flexibility, and liquidity. It looks at debt and other liabilities, and it looks at institutional framework. And then there are some other aspects that can go into the rating, but that's the city GEO rating criteria. And then the Chicago Public Schools is under school district GEO criteria, which is similar, but it just looks generally at economy, finances, financial management assessment, and the debt profile, which also includes pensions. So similar criteria, but a little bit different at the same time. So as far as where our ratings stand, the City of Chicago rating right now is BBB plus with a stable outlook. Our City of Chicago rating is investment grade, and we recently changed the outlook to stable. It had been negative, but we changed it to stable after the City Council approved the new water sewer tax that will support the larger contributions to the municipal employees' pension plan. After they did that, the committee felt that it was unlikely to lower the rating in the next 2 years, and so they revised the rating to the outlook to stable. But the report did note, you know, several things that S&P Global will continue to monitor. As far as the city's credit quality, that pension plan is only 20% funded, and the city will need to come up with more revenue after the five-year ramp-up period to continue to support those contributions. So that continues to weigh on the city's rating. And so looking ahead, we'll be looking at the city's efforts to identify further revenue sources after the five-year ramp-up period. We also have noted the scoop-and-toss debt management that the city has used in the past and plans to phase out by 2019, so we'll be keeping track of that. And then just looking at their budget, they do, you know, given the pension contributions and other things, we do still see their budget as structurally imbalanced. We'll be looking at ways that they continue to work towards having a sustainable, balanced budget. And then we also are looking at the investment returns on the pension plans, because that could impact the assumptions that they're making in terms of what the pension contribution will be after the five-year ramp-up period. So we think it's unlikely that the rating will be improved over the next 2 years, but we don't expect to lower it. We could lower it if there were negative budget variances or a big use of reserves, or if they're not timely on making further identification of revenue sources, but our expectation is that the rating will remain the same over the next 2 years. The Chicago Public Schools rating right now is a B with a negative outlook. That is a non-investment grade rating. We recently lowered the rating one notch to the B level, and that was based on the district's continued really weak liquidity, just looking at their most recent cash flow forecast and the continued reliance on cash flow borrowing, and the fact that the teacher's contract does put some more pressure on their budget. We lowered the rating one notch. Their cash position is expected to be negative throughout almost all of fiscal 2017, and it could worsen because of the risky assumptions in their budget. So the liquidity has really been driving that CPS rating, and is what we continue to monitor. We're also monitoring their efforts to meet their fiscal 2017 budget targets. They have made some progress getting the property tax levy that has helped close the gap, but it does rely on certain assumptions that Lawrence, for example, talked about. And then they are still making some of the cost-cutting initiatives that they've laid out in their budget. That those are being implemented throughout the fiscal year. And we also think, compared to the city of Chicago in particular, the district just has a lot less revenue-raising flexibility, so that's part of the rating as well. So we do have a negative outlook on that rating, which means we think that there's at least a 1 in 3 chance that we could lower the rating within 1 year. And possible reasons for lowering it is any major change, negative variance to their cash flow. We feel like the cash flow is so vulnerable that if something unexpected happens, it would be a major problem for them. So that could lead us to lower the rating. We also are looking at their efforts to secure the last portion of their line of credit, which they expect to do in January. We'll continue to monitor their market access and also meeting those budget targets in fiscal 2017. So if any of those worsen or we could lower the rating further. And then I'll just end with, we have taken note at S&P Global in terms of the shared tax base of the city of Chicago and the other agencies that share the same tax base. And we have had some impact on some of those overlapping ratings because of the shared tax burden and what those taxpayers will need to support. And we're also looking at, considering the potential loss of flexibility that one entity could have depending on the solutions that another entity takes. So that has had some rating pressure on other entities that have much higher ratings but are part of the same tax base, such as the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago, City Colleges, Cook County. Those places all have much higher ratings, but their rating did experience a little bit of pressure, at least in part, because of the overlying tax base.
Jennifer, I'm going to put you on the spot first, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure.
I know you love that. I want to go back to the assumed rate of return that the pension fund projections are reliant on. So France at 8.5, I thought 7.5. We won't argue over percentage.
Yeah, I think it's lower, too.
So somewhere like in the 7.5.
I think 7.
I stand corrected.
Oh no, I didn't mean that to second guess, but just for the sake of argument. So a lot is riding on that assumed rate of return. What are you seeing in terms of adjustments other municipalities are making or not making in terms of their expectation on investment performance over the long haul? Are we an outlier in terms of being at that 7%+? Are we in line, or does everybody have their head in the sand?
Sure. I think just based on my experience and covering entities across Illinois, 7.5 or so is kind of average. The state got a lot of publicity when they lowered theirs to 7%, I believe they did recently. So I think there's been a lot of attention on the investment returns, generally speaking, in the muni market, because low investment returns in recent times you look at those assumptions and people are starting to realize that the investment returns are coming in much lower. But I think for localities, just based on my experience reading audits, 7.5 is probably fairly typical.
The first question, by the way, is who estimated 8.5 or 7.5% return on city investments, and is that person in the room? So, Lawrence, Fran, any feeling on the need or appropriateness of lowering that rate of return expectation?
I think you have to look at the rate of return as well as the overall condition of the fund every year. That's how Illinois and Chicago have gotten into this problem, is that in 1995, the state of Illinois set a 50-year plan to address its unfunded pension liabilities and didn't look back for at least 8 years. These funds and what the Civic Federation and what Fran is saying is you have to watch what's going on in these funds. You have to look at the assumed rate of return and see what the actuarial basis based on performance and future expectation. But you also have to look at in terms of whether other things are going on in terms of the age of these funds. We were right once when we set the multiplier in state statute, and we haven't been right since. And so not going back to check the full, all of the different assumptions that are built into it. What's clear is the governments are struggling to make up for all the years of underfunding. And that's not going to be achieved painlessly, and there is no real gimmick that's available that's going to address it. So, yes, we should be addressing the assumed rate of return. It should be more reflective of what's going on in the marketplace. There are smoothing and other justifications that well-funded pension plans use, but you can't apply those same rules to Illinois when it doesn't follow the basic funding rule.
Excellent. I'm going to swing back to the interest rate environment in a second because that also plays into some of the projections that have been made by the mayor. But, Fran, just jumping to you for a second, do you see the possibility or even likelihood that a city income tax could ever be proposed as part of the solution?
The mayor has repeatedly ruled that out because of the disadvantage that the city would be in having a higher tax than the suburbs. I mean, he's been raiding companies from the suburbs. You start with a city income tax, then that might go right out the window and the trend would be reversed. But I do believe that the city needs some new form of revenue that's different than what we have now. You cannot keep going back to the property tax, even though property taxes in Chicago have been relatively a bargain compared to the suburbs. People here have gotten used to this because politicians have spoiled them and stayed away from the property tax. The Mayor Daley was phobic about the property tax. I think he raised property taxes twice in 22 years by like 2%. It was ridiculous, but people assume that that's the way it's always going to be. And so if you keep hitting it, and he has hit it very hard when you consider that he's hit the $588 million for police and fire pension and school constructions, and then the Chicago Public Schools have hit another $250. That is a lot of money. You've basically doubled the property taxes in Chicago.
So I should have credited Fritz Kagi from CWAM with that previous question about.
So a city income tax, you're asking.
So what are the options?
Well, a service tax. Again, the sales tax on services. This is a service economy. Why are we not paying sales taxes on health club memberships, on nail salons, on hairdressers and haircuts and whatever all the other attorneys, sorry, Jim, accountants, whoever. If we are buying services, we should pay sales tax on that. And again, that's another thing that goes back to Springfield.
So if you were to predict the one kind of big mover in this, it would be the sales tax extended.
That's the one that makes the most sense, doesn't it?
Lawrence, any comment on that?
Sure. First off, I think Fran sums it up nicely. The easy answer that someone else is going to pay our taxes isn't going to work. So if you basically look at other metropolitan areas that went with city income tax, Washington, D.C., nothing did more for the Maryland and Virginia economy than having a local income tax in D.C. You look at what happened in New York when the New York went to a city tax, nothing helped New Jersey more. So you have to be aware of that. But I think it points to as well, in her suggestion, something Mayor Emanuel said during his initial campaign, something that Governor Rauner said during his campaign, is that they were going to look at a sales tax on services and expand the base. It is an obvious answer. I think in terms of the health of the city and the unintended consequences, you're going to have to go to the state of Illinois. You would need that for a sales tax on services for Chicago. The most reasonable would be for the state to expand its sales tax to include services and bring down the rate, right? Right now, the city of Chicago effectively has the highest sales tax in the United States. And when you look at when you include the McCormick place rate that's applied to it as well, it's over 11%. That makes people, that affects people's decision as to where they buy things. Great. If we brought that rate down, there would be some economic benefit for the city as well. That would require expanding the base.
Jennifer, I'm just going to interject you into the conversation too. As a rating agency, how, on a scale of 1 to 5, how do you rate sales tax on services as a reliable funding source as an input into your ratings?
I feel like that question is relating to what they're saying, and S&P doesn't have any sort of public policy stance on what would be the best way to solve the cities or the schools.
I'm not asking policy, but just from interpreting the quality of different funding
sources. Of sales taxes? in general?
Yes.
I mean, obviously, sales taxes, the way, you know, an agency will, you know, that's a type of revenue that is cyclical depending on economic cycles. So that's what I would say about that potential revenue source, generally speaking, across the country.
Fran, now, another possibility would be a congestion fee, which the city seems to be heading in that direction by the difficulty in driving. We're constricting the lanes. We're putting in bus rapid transit lanes. We're putting in medians, and it's harder and harder to drive. The parking tax has gone up and up. They seem to have there's more bike lanes. There seems to be a bias against driving anyway. So what if they were to start charging people a fee for driving downtown like they do in London? I know that's probably, it's a little bit more difficult in terms of how do you physically do it. Do you have a toll booth somewhere? But if you could figure out a way, that's another possibility because they're going in that direction anyway.
I can't help but add that the brilliant decision-making that the one constitutional amendment we would put on the ballot was not to change the way we draw districts. It was not to basically deal with the unfunded pension liability. It was to protect transportation funding. So now, effectively, if you had a congestion tax, all of that money would have to go into road building.
Then never mind.
So that takes another issue off the table.
The law of unintended consequences.
Change the Constitution accordingly. Yeah. I think it really points to, as well, the fact that so much of the city's future is tied to the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. If you look what the state of Illinois has been doing, it has not been helping the city come up with different means for addressing its problems. The relief that was granted to the Chicago Public Schools was a $250 million property tax increase authorization. That's separate than the $215. That was basically, they can talk in Springfield that they're against property taxes, but they're driving the local governments into property taxes. Unexpected for many of us was something new called a transit TIF. That changes the direction of how we fund public transit. Right now we're going to basically start using property tax incremental growth in order to back up loans that we're taking from the federal government. One point is that is a creative solution to a problem we have in terms of match for the CTA, but it's also pushing into more property taxes to fund areas of the government that historically been subject to the gas tax, to the sales tax, to the state funds, and now is being turned to the property tax.
And the sad thing is that even if the city said to the state, well, if you don't want a budget, then go ahead, don't have a budget, but give us the authority to solve our own problems, we won't even get that because Governor Rauner needs Chicago as a bargaining chip to get what he needs. So we can't even go to the state and say, please give us the right to tax ourselves on services, because we won't get it.
Okay, so Joe Moore has a question for Lawrence, and then I'm going to ask a question of Joe Moore. So this is your ticket. This is your ticket to entry. So Alderman Moore asked Lawrence. You mentioned that both Washington D.C. and New York are enacting a city income tax or have enacted a city income tax with short-term negative consequences, but now both cities are flourishing. Can the same happen here if Chicago enacted an income tax? And I'll open that up to the group.
Sure. And the definition of flourishing is in the eye of the beholder. Those people that ride the metro in Washington, D.C., where major parts of it are not operational, is less than flourishing because they haven't dedicated the resources.
But so, every time I visit D.C., you see all this residential development taking place. So there are people who want to live in Washington, D.C., and the same thing's happening in New York as well.
Right. So basically the point is, too, that the growth is going, yes, in D.C. There's an international phenomenon going on right now, and that is basically the re-institution of urban centers, right? The city of Chicago is getting some of that benefit. But cities all over the world, young people are being drawn, mostly for economic and cultural and other reasons, into the cities. We get some of that benefit. As unstable as the state of Illinois is, we're not getting what we should. It is not the form of taxation, but it's how it's applied. And the concern would be if you raise the income tax for the state of Illinois and share with the local governments, that is a far better tax policy than saying your urban centers are on their own. We do not believe at the Civic Federation that the city can afford on the backs of the property taxpayers or the residents to fix all of their own problems and be the economic generator that the rest of the country is counting on for our urban centers in the state of Illinois.
So I want to swing back, and I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. It's really for the panel, but I'd love you to pipe in. So far, the city council has been along for the ride as the mayor has made these necessary tax increases in order, or arguably necessary tax increases, in order to stabilize the pension system. How strong is the will? How much longer will city council members go along with these tax increases when they're answering to their constituents every day and hearing the complaints about the higher property taxes, the higher, you know, utility taxes? You know, it's going to take more than just the mayor to have the will. It's going to take 50 aldermen.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Trump-Clinton election. That is an angry electorate. And I think there's a certain point where people, I mean, they're laying in the weeds now. They haven't had a chance to register their discontent over these pile of taxes that they have endured in the last couple of years. But it makes you wonder, in 2019, how will they vote? Will they throw the rascals out? Or will they credit them and say they had the guts to do what others did not? This, I wouldn't want to risk it. It's a very angry electorate. I just don't know how much more people are willing to take and how angry they are. But I suspect they're very angry. And when they get the next couple of bills, including the garbage fee and the water and sewer fee and the two more tax legs of the police and fire tax increase and the CPS tax increase, there are people liable to start screaming.
So, like Annie Hall, where there's a question about Marshall McLuhan, and Marshall McLuhan is in the movie line and there to answer the question on the spot. Joe, just weigh in for a second. I hope I'm not breaking City Club.
We have no rules.
Okay. And speak loudly so everyone can hear you.
Well, I think the okay. Do I have to face them?
That looks comfortable.
Okay. I think the question comes down to picking your poison. Yes. I mean, nobody wants to vote for property tax increases or fee increases or whatever. And I agree with Fran. There's a very, very nasty and angry electorate out there. However, it's questions picking your poison. You could do nothing and then let the city's credit rating go in the toilet, borrowing costs go through the roof, and we're not able to provide the services that people have become accustomed to, and they get pissed off at us for that. So when you're up with two bad choices, pick the one that's more fiscally responsible. And I think that's kind of the prevalent feeling among members of the city council. Plus, it's always been my view in the culture of city politics that as an alderman, if you take care of business in the ward and you show up and you respond to the calls and you try to do the services as best as possible, and most importantly, you explain yourself. You take the opportunity, you communicate with people and explain why you're voting the way you are and why what does the challenges facing the city, I think a majority of the voters will catch you slack. And I've been able to do it so far for 25 years, and so far it's worked. We'll see what happens if I decide to run again in 2019. But we have some very, as these ladies and gentlemen have pointed out, we have some very, very serious challenges still facing us. As the elected officials who are charged with the responsibility of making sure things are taken care of, and that we don't have a choice. And that's when you just go out and you explain to the public the difficult choices that are facing us and why we're doing it.
Are you thinking of retirement?
No. I'm not. Not right now, at least.
Alderman, thank you very much.
If I could just add one thing.
We have time just for a few more questions. Lawrence, did you want to interject?
I just wanted to add, I mean, what really you can boil what Alderman Moore said down to, the public needs to be educated. Mm-hmm. They need to understand what's going on. the idea that you're fiscally responsible or you're financially conservative because you haven't voted for a tax increase, yet you've run up the unfunded liabilities by underfunding the pensions, by taking on debt, by borrowing, using borrowed funds to buy everything from planters to salt, surface salt for winter, is something that people need to understand is not financially reasonable or responsible.
This is a quick lightning round because I think I know the responses from the group. But Mark Emanuelson from Verbata asks, is there a risk of bankruptcy for Chicago?
I think not.
Right now, under the existing law, it would require the mayor, whether it's the city of Chicago or the Chicago Public Schools, which is in actually more dire financial shape, to go to Springfield and get the Illinois General Assembly for a majority of them to pass a resolution to allow them to file for bankruptcy. The Civic Federation doesn't believe that's the best path forward.
And Emanuel would move heaven and earth before he let that happen under his watch. He does not want to go down as the mayor who presided over a bankrupt city.
Now, the other thing that you want to watch is what happens with the Republican-controlled Congress in the House and the Senate and the White House. Are they going to make a move? Because they spent most of last year looking at Puerto Rico and figuring out how to help Puerto Rico manage its debt. Some significant changes may be in the offing. But we hope, and the Civic Federation believes, the state of Illinois has an obligation to the city of Chicago and its local governments. And there's a role to keep these governments that we can from bankruptcy rather than pushing them into it.
Jennifer, I'm going to guess you don't want to get a mile within that question. Okay, I was right about that. Two more, and then we're going to wrap up. So here we're talking about the city taxes, right? And they've gone up by Greg Hines' estimate about over $1 billion just to cover the pension shortfall. You know, we've got increase in county sales tax, soda pop tax, all the other taxes that have come up. If I were putting $100 on the table, I think we can expect a state income tax increase some point in the future, perhaps. You know, at one point, do we reach the tipping point that Chicago is just a place where people don't want to do business or live anymore? And how far away are we from that? Looking forward, not just today, but 2 or 3 years from now. Fran, I'm going to throw that one to you first.
Well, I think some of the things that really stick in people's craw are the red light tickets and the speed camera tickets and how the fines that the city is constantly after people for. I've had friends who've said that they double parked for a second, they were in the car and they got a $100 ticket. So those things probably stick in people's craw even more than some of the taxes that they pay. The city has been switching to a more fee and fine-based revenue system, and I think that's the thing that just really, really people remember. And we have this case, if you remember, this is another red flag out there, that the city did not follow the law and the procedures required by law in giving out the red light and speed camera tickets, and there's $200 million in potential refunds that could be ordered by the courts in a class action lawsuit. Now, God forbid we have that problem, too.
But just swinging back to a business climate issue, because that is a very, very legitimate point, but I don't think businesses will decide to relocate or stay based on that specifically.
No, but the nickel and diming of business is very difficult. And when you have Tony Preckwinkle adding her penny again and then the sugar tax and it's just a bit much, and at a certain point if you're a restaurant in downtown Chicago and the what is the tax 11? Did you say 11 and a half?
11 and a quarter.
Yeah, I mean, would you rather stay in the suburbs and be able to pull up, park,
and pay
a lesser tax? Yes, it's going
to
start hurting. It's going to start hurting people who want to come downtown for theater and dinner and so on. Why bother if that's what you have to pay, and the parking fee and the parking tax and so on?
Lawrence, any thoughts on that?
Two things. From an economic development standpoint, what drives business and business investment is predictability. We have the worst economic development strategy by not knowing what the state of Illinois is going to do next in terms of tax policy. What keeps people in a city is its attractiveness, its proximity to jobs. We still have lots of great jobs. We have a lot of people who want to be in the city of Chicago, but we have some real challenges. What challenges that we are not feeling immediately, but we are really planting the seeds by not investing in higher higher education because we don't have a state budget, by not funding mental health services. The quality of life is impacted when you don't have a state budget because we're not providing the essential services that we need in order to make the community livable. We're not at a point where people are not investing. And by that, I mean people are still investing. They still want to be in Chicago, but it's not forever if we don't address our problems. And we're not getting the level of growth we should get by having as strong of a economic base as we have.
Final lightning round. Given what you know, take off your reporter, your rating analyst, and your
fedora.
Your fedora off. At an 80% premium over the benchmark, would you buy City of Chicago bonds today, Fran?
What's the interest rate? I guess I would. Yeah, I mean, you get a high return, and I don't think there's a chance of default. I think I would.
It's 4.5% tax-free,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I might.
Okay. Lawrence?
So I think you have to recognize that interest rates are moving against our government, right? I mean, our local governments here at the state level. Just since the election, we've seen a spike in interest rates, and that's being driven because the federal government plans to borrow, or the expectation is the federal government's going to borrow $1 trillion to run an infrastructure program. That means other people's demand for the city of Chicago, Chicago Public Schools, and even the state of Illinois is going to be higher. So there are higher interest rates in the future. The Civic Federation doesn't buy less than investment grade credits, so we're not going to. So I personally am not going to buy their debt. Do I want to see them default? Do I want to be part of pushing them to default? Absolutely not. We want to see them stabilize. We want to see our governments move forward.
Jennifer?
I already said we don't give buy or sell recommendations.
I was not entirely surprised with that. Well, listen, thank you, Fran, Lawrence, and Jennifer. Thank you for a wonderful and lively conversation. And thank you again to the City Club.